Today's podcast is sponsored by GenesisCare, national independent cancer care provider and experts in breast health, diagnostics and treatments.
Hello, welcome to And Then Came Breast Cancer, the podcast for everyone whose life has been touched by the disease. I'm Victoria Derbyshire, and my world changed in 2015 when I was diagnosed. I leant on my friends, my family, and of course, the medics, the surgeons, the nurses who ultimately saved my life. The Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity believes that no one should face breast cancer on their own. And they wanted to create a podcast series which would be there 24 hours a day for those dark, what am I going to do moments when your life gets changed too. An honest friend, not just for you, but for your own family and friends who are also perhaps looking for guidance, support, and maybe answers. We've built up a whole library where we've talked about things like faith and friendship and fear. We've looked at the latest medical advances. We've had really honest conversations about relationships, wigs, reconstruction surgery, and cold caps. We've had some tears. We've had some laughs, often dark humour. We've had a bit of swearing. We've had some soul-searching moments as well. And we've even won a British Podcast Gold Award for services to the breast cancer community. But there's so much more to talk about on how this condition affects your body and your mind and your life. So welcome to the third series of our podcast. And so on to this episode. We often talk about how everyone's cancer story is unique. No matter how much common ground there is, how much of a shared experience some aspects of having breast cancer can be, your experience, your journey is yours alone. And my guest today will demonstrate just how everyone responds to breast cancer and its treatment differently. In keeping with the tradition of this podcast, I'm going to ask our guests to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Victoria. Hi, I'm Tracy. Hi, everybody. So I'm Tracy Pinfold. I'm from East Yorkshire, 52 years of age. That hurt. And mom to Jacob, who's 22 and is a giant. He's I have to look up at him nowadays, which is terrible. Married to Richard. I've been with him for 33 years and we still like each other. We've had a good few weekends in there. So happy days. And I am with my lovely sister, Kathy, today. So I'm the big, much older sister. And Kathy and I are here today to talk to you about our breast cancer journey.
Hey, hi, everyone. It's Kathy here. I'm the little big sister. So Tracy's definitely older, but a lot smaller in height. So yes, I am here today to obviously share our story in terms of what we're here to talk about and just demonstrate what differences there are in terms of our own personal journeys. 48, a little bit younger than Tracy for sure, married to my lovely wife Alana, have been for 13 years and we currently live in Windsor. I know it sounds like we have an Irish accent, but it is real. But we definitely do live in Windsor. Lovely to meet you all.
Thank you so much for being with us. I just want to talk a little bit about sisters and the relationship between sisters. I've got one. She's 4 years younger. I absolutely adore her. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me a little bit about your relationship growing up and into adulthood and how you feel about each other. And be honest.
So Kathy and I we're two of seven. So my mum had two sets of twins. And I know, straight after each other as well. I'll have to tell you a funny story another day on that, Victoria. But yeah, so mom had George and Patrick, me and Tony. So I'm half a twin. Then there was Trisha, Kathy, and then our sister Rosemary. So there was four girls, three boys. So the girls outnumbered the boys. And we grew up in a three-bedroomed house in a little place called Mahery in Northern Ireland. And we were very riotous as youngsters. Our dad died at 39 of pancreatic cancer. So very early on, my mum had all of us to raise on her own, although our uncle Philip, who's her brother, moved in with us for 7 years. He was 25. And we often laugh and say that we drove him to the priesthood because he became a priest. He became a priest afterwards. So we always sort of hold ourselves responsible for that. But he's a very good priest and very with it and very, very well informed man. But I think growing up, we all had to be heard. So it was very much you fight to be heard. You had to make sure that if you felt very strongly about something or wanted to watch something on TV, you spoke out and raised your hand or did other things if we had to. But four girls in one bedroom, three boys in another, and then mommy and when daddy was alive in the other room. So I think growing up, it was survival of the fittest or the quickest. And we were absolutely confident that if dad had stayed around, there would have been far more of us, because one of our neighbors on one side had 16 kids. The other neighbor had 13. So yeah, massive families. We've got hundreds of cousins that we don't even know, Victoria.
Wow. So, this is like a script for a drama. A Sharon Hogan drama.
Yeah, I know. We often say we should write a book, really, you know.
Mm. So let me bring in Kathy then. So how would you, that is a perfect description from Tracy. We've got such a brilliant snapshot of your lives growing up. Yeah. What would you say, Kathy, you admire in Sister Tracy in terms of qualities?
Tracy was obviously because dad passed away quite young, mum went out and did three different jobs to obviously feed us. And Tracy was, George and Patrick went off to university, and Tracy and Tony were obviously the next eldest in the family. So Tracy very much had the role of the mother. And we often call her still to this day, the list lady. She's very organized and absolutely helped us through our education, you know, helped us more ways than one. In terms of obviously me, in terms of me coming out, being gay, she was one of the first people I told, along with my other sister, Patricia. We're all very close, the three of us actually. Mm-hmm. We're all very, very close. But in terms of Tracy and how her leadership was always there from a young age. So she had no option, I guess. She was thrown into the deep end, and you know, she used to have to dress us, get us ready for school. So we learned a lot from her from an early stage, and her resilience in terms of having to deal with life. And obviously from all of our perspectives, losing dad at a really young age, I was only four at the time, so can't really remember very much about it, to be fair. But yeah, Tracy was very much like the big sister stroke mother role. You know, we often give her a good run for her money, where we'd bring all of her friends into the house and she'd try to be studying on a Sunday evening for an exam the next day, and there would be a riot going on downstairs with all of our friends in the living room.
Very true.
Yeah, but I mean, complete admiration for her, you know, for all of my siblings, but certainly for Tracy. And as you'll hear in a minute, that she obviously had cancer just slightly before me. So she made it a very easy journey for me in terms of giving me the confidence, and obviously the precedent that she set in terms of dealing with that helped me very much on my journey. So yes, big admiration. She can be a pain in the backside when she wants to be as well, of course, like any sister. We're very close indeed. Very open, very honest. And, you know, she's definitely, along with my other sister, Patricia, the very first port of call should anything go on, be it good, bad, ugly or fantastic.
At this point, I just want to bring another guest to the table. Hi, Jackie.
Hiya. I'm Jackie, and I am a breast clinical nurse specialist, and I work part-time at Future Dreams Health, based in King's Cross. And otherwise, I do full-time hours cadenced in the NHS. So I have, you hear from my accent, I'm from Australia originally. I come for a six-month holiday, and that was roughly 19 years ago. I just fell in love with living in England and London particularly, and love the opportunity to travel. So all my family is based very much back in Australia and Melbourne.
And you have two brothers?
Two brothers, both younger, so I'm the oldest. A bit like Tracy, I love my lists. So I can never go too far without a list. So we still keep in contact despite the difference. I try and get home, you know, once every 12, 18 months. Obviously COVID hindered that a little bit, but yeah, you know, through WhatsApp, FaceTime these days, I think it makes communication so much easier. So yeah, we'll have a really good relationship with my two brothers, their wives, and I've got five nephews.
Tracy, I wonder if you can describe how you discovered you had symptoms of breast cancer.
So I had an inverted. Jacob was born premature 22 years ago now, and following breastfeeding Jacob, I had a slightly inverted nipple, which I thought, oh, that's part of just breastfeeding. And I'd had it for years and years and years. But about 6 months before I got diagnosed, my husband said, listen, I think that's more inverted than it is, you know, normally. And I said, no, it's not. It's fine. It's just old age. I'm getting old. It's grand. And he'd obviously sneaked off and had a wee look on the internet and thought, this isn't normal. You know, I don't believe this is right. So I'm going to pressure again. Anyway, he convinced me to go to the doctors. I felt fine. I wasn't tired. I wasn't sick. I was fit. I was healthy. I was running London marathons. You know, it was just not even on my radar. And I was so confident when I went to the doctor. I didn't even consider breast cancer at the time. I just thought she'd go, do you want us to pop that out? And I would have gone, no, I'm not bothered. I've been with Richard for a long time. I don't think we're going to separate, so leave it be. And the GP said, I can't feel anything. But do you know what? Because of your family history, because mum and dad have both died of cancer, even though breast cancer wasn't in the family, let's just be, you know, take some precautions and send you off to the breast care clinic. Went into the breast care clinic, and I'm not joking you, within 2 minutes of the beautiful consultant touching me, she said, have you got anybody with you? And I went, no, my husband's 2 hours away. Why? And she said, you're going to be here for about 2 hours. Well, I nearly vomited because I just went, why? And she said, well, I can feel something behind here and it's quite large. So my whole world in that moment just flashed in front of me. And I said to her, right, I'll ring my husband and I'll get him to come. But genuinely, I had no fear whatsoever that I'd had breast cancer. The amazing nurses had then whisked me down, got me a mammogram, did some ultrasounds on me and took a biopsy. And by the time my husband had arrived and I said to him, I need you to come. And he said, why? And I goes, well, I don't know. They're a bit worried. And he goes, he knows what I'm like, because I go from 100, 0 to 100. I'm a sort of wee bit extreme. And he said, are you sure? And I went, yeah, they've told me I've got to be here for 2 hours. So do come. Anyway, he came. And by the time Richard arrived, I'd been told that I had breast cancer. So they told me in that session that we are 99.9% sure. And I'd cried on my own. So I was okay. I got rid of the tears. Richard arrived. And again, he went, I said, we've got this room on our own. I've got something to tell you. We've got breast cancer. And he just looked at me and went, what? Are you sure? Are you sure? And I went, yes, I'm sure. So anyway, the amazing consultant took us in to so that they could show Richard the scans on the screen and went through it all again with Richard. And then I think I spent the rest of the night with Richard just crying. While she was telling me again, this time I heard it better because you're more aware second time round. And he just sat there crying behind me. He couldn't breathe. And we'd lots of questions. So we asked lots of questions. And then we went home and we cried more. I think Richard drank almost a bottle of gin that night because he was like, I can't do this without you. I need you. Jacob needs you. There's no way. Like this just can't be happening. So it was a bit crazy and a bit whirlwind. But what I thought was amazing that was that they could tell me on the day. They didn't make me wait. And I know that's not always the case.
It's not. I mean, that is, you know, if there's any bonus in that experience, then it's that you were able to find out there and then.
That's it.
As opposed to going through the sort of anxiety of waiting and waiting and waiting, even though it's the news that you don't want to hear.
Correct.
Absolutely don't want to hear. Thank you, Tracy. Kathy, you had found a small lump, but was told it was a cyst, but you decided to go for a second opinion.
Well, it was actually 6 months previous. I just was moving over to the UK for my job, and I had felt a lump in the front of my breast and went to the hospital. Obviously had a mammogram and they said, no, we think it's probably just a cyst. So got the all clear. So that was just 6 months previous. Relocated to the UK probably about 3 weeks later. And then obviously Tracy had been diagnosed with the breast cancer. I'll never forget it. It was my first Christmas in London. And she rang me whilst I was in work. And of course, Alana and I were going up to, we had planned to spend Christmas with Tracy anyway. So having spent a few days with her over the Christmas period, clearly we were in the zone of checking ourselves quite regular at that point. And just one night before we all went to bed, myself, Tracy, Richard, and Alana, Tracy was like...
Not together though, Kathy, yeah.
Yeah, not together, yeah. Gone are the days where we used to share the same bedroom, Tracy.
I know.
So yeah, I was obviously having to look at hers again and was, you know, understanding how it felt. And then we all just started to check. And then I felt something just to the right of my breast on the side, and I got... That feels like a little lump there. And of course, Tracy was like, let me feel. Alana was like, let me feel. And then I was like, Richard, you have a feeling. Then he went to feel and he was like, no, actually, I should be feeling your breast. You're my sister-in-law. We had a right giggle about that. But of course, like Tracy, based on the fact that I had literally just had a scan 6 months previous to it, I was completely confident that this wasn't going to be cancer. And of course, we certainly didn't want to have a double whammy with the family in terms of saying, okay, Tracy's got it, but, you know I like to follow in the footsteps of my big sister, but this is definitely something I didn't want to have the same thing as. So, but nonetheless, of course, these guys pressed me to go and get it checked. And we actually went home to Ireland about 5 weeks later, and I'd went to see the doctor, and she said, listen, you need to get this seen too, especially based on the fact that your sister has it and obviously the family history. So, I said, look, I'm off to Ireland for a week. Can you leave it for a week? And she said, when are you back? And I said, we're back Thursday night. So of course, needless to say, when we got back Thursday night, we come in and the letter was there to go and see the consultant then on the Friday morning. And again, I was very confident, like Tracy, naively, even though she'd just been diagnosed, I went in and had a really good conversation with Miss Clayton, my consultant, really lovely lady. And, you know, we were joking and laughing, and she felt me and she was like, listen, if you've got to come back and see me, it's probably not good news. But if you've got to come back and see me, it's probably not good news. And I was like, well, I hope I don't see you again in the nicest possible way. And we were giggling and laughing, and of course went down, and exactly the same experience as Tracy, went in, had the ultrasound, and then another doctor come in, and then another doctor come in, and I'm like, oh, okay, right, let's have a biopsy. And of course, once I heard the word biopsy, I was like, this isn't good. So up I got then off, and I went, do you think I've got cancer? And she went, we think you do, but obviously go and speak to the consultant. So poor Lana was sitting in the waiting room, and she was sitting with her back to me, and I literally just walked over, tapped her on the shoulder, and put her fingers up to say, right, we're on our way back up. And of course, she went into convulsions and tears straight away. And I was like, oh goodness, this isn't good. But again, for me, even though Tracy was, you know, in tears, I was the complete opposite. I was just into, you know, that survival mode of, right, I'm dealing with this, and was very much, let's take this on board. And I guess probably because she had put, you know, she was ahead of me, and she was already at that stage where it just wasn't an option that we weren't going to deal with it. So yeah, that's how I was diagnosed.
Can I ask how many weeks apart were you in terms of that diagnosis?
Yes. 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow. Six.
6 weeks. Okay. Yeah.
And so what did you say to each other when your diagnosis, Kathy, came along? What were you sharing? What were you not sharing?
Well, when Tracy obviously was diagnosed, she is not only my sister, but my best friend, of course, along with Tricia as well. But, you know, I was like, after a couple of days when she told me, I was very much, right, hang on a minute, you can't die on me. This isn't happening. You're just not, it's just not an option. And that was probably, I was more emotional about her than I was about myself, if I'm being honest. And of course, Tracy's reaction was very similar to mine. And our immediate thoughts as well, and we often talk about this ourselves, is that one of us, we would have been absolutely horrified if one of us had have made it and the other one didn't. You know, so that was really playing on. I think that, you know, for me, I was happy to give up my life for Tracy. For Tracy, she was happy to give up her life for me. You know, and that was like, that's just out of sheer love, right? So those are the kind of conversations that we were having. But you know, Tracy, you can come in here now in terms of what we talked about, how we, you know, kept the focus points there in terms of the positivity. So yeah, if you want to jump in from that.
Yeah, no, I think for me and Kathy, the minute she was in my home and they were visiting us, so she didn't tell me on the phone. She came up to see me that weekend, and our Uncle Philip, who was the one that we drove to the priesthood, was visiting as well that weekend. And Philly was sitting in the living room, and all of a sudden, Alana kept saying to Kathy, tell her. And I was just like, what? Richard had got up, gone into the kitchen to make a drink. And by the time he came back in, we were all crying. And Richard went, I only went to make a drink. What happened? what's happened? And all of a sudden, I told him that Kathy had breast cancer, because at that stage she'd had it diagnosed. And he went, no, this isn't funny. And everybody started crying. So I think for me, my immediate reaction to Kathy's point was, oh my God, if she's dying, because at this stage we didn't know what grade she was. If she's sicker than me, I don't know if I can do this, because I've got to, first of all, invest in me and get myself through this. How am I going to keep her focused and positive? And I think that was the bit that both of us went into, as Kathy calls it, protective mode. You know, we were making sure that the other person was going to have the best journey that they possibly could without worrying about the other person. But that was never going to happen, because as Kathy said, we're really close sisters, a very close family. Had a lot of tragedy in our life. Our youngest sister, Rosemary, died at 13 in a car accident. So the three sisters that were left, we were very close knit and very tight. And therefore, we went into, right, let's get a plan together, me and Melissa. Let's get a plan. Who's going to row to where? Who's going to take you to surgery? How are we going to get you recovered? Alana can work, because I know she's just moved here to Windsor for a new job. So da-da-da-da-da. And I think that's where we went. But I think for both of us, it was we literally blindsided Philly, our uncle, and he went white. I thought he was then going to have a heart attack in the middle of it all, because he was just like, my head is about to explode. Because he just couldn't believe that it was actually happening to our family. And I don't think anybody else could. But it's funny how that flick went in both of our minds of, right, let's get this sorted. Let's get focused. Let's go.
Was it exactly the same cancer?
Exactly.
Yeah,
both of us. Breasts. I'm a right tit and Tracy's a left tit.
So to speak.
I know.
You had this, you were treated at different hospitals, and I don't know if it was both of you or one of you had this sort of philosophy of share but don't compare. Tell me more about that and why that was awful.
Yeah, so I think for Kathy and I, Kathy's philosophy is very much about, I want to know. And so she did a lot of research on the internet, where I was like, ignorance is bliss. I do not want to know. I'll just listen to what the consultant tells me, because the more I know, then I will then try and control it, because I'm a control freak. So for me, it was very much about, you know, how do I control what I've got within my gift versus what I haven't got. And I was very clear on what I could and couldn't control. Kathy was really gung-ho. She was like, really? Right, let's do this. Come on, everybody. We're going to do it together. And she was very positive. But in many ways, that worried me, because it felt like she wasn't being vulnerable enough. And it also worried me that she was going to crash and burn at some point. So I think we had very different approaches to it, but we had exactly the same diagnosis. Kathy's was, as she said, the right. Mine was the left. Mine was behind my nipple. Hers was in the ducts. And they were similar size. So mine was 30 millimeters. Kathy, what was yours?
Mine was 28.
Yeah. So literally, you couldn't have got more like for like. And then our treatment plans were exactly the same, but we had a very different program of treatment as well, because we were in two different authorities, two different areas. So mine was up in Yorkshire, Kathy's was down in Windsor. And so her treatment plan, whilst it was exactly the same, it was in a different format, mine wasn't. So hers was very much, tell me everything. Mine was, no, only tell me what I need to know, because I can't take on anymore. So please.
So do you think the way you approached it differently, and do you think the way you each approached it confirmed your character traits, or did it bring out new character traits?
Yeah, no, I think we definitely went into our natural style for sure. Tracy, as I said, likes to be a bit more reserved but likes to get organized, where I'm just like, right, let's just get on with this and deal with it. Our natural styles for sure, our natural characters for sure. I'm very much, Tracy is, don't get me wrong, she's very motivational. I'm very motivated, but I'm very, you know, nothing is unachievable in my eyes. And I'm very much But I don't think, and that's where Tracy's probably calling out the vulnerability piece. I'm very much right. Let's go for it. See what happens and then we'll work it out. Where Tracy's like, no, let's put a little bit of structure in, you know, like for even for today, for as an example, I was like, no, let's just get on and talk. We know our story. And she's like, no, we need to have a plan. So, you know, we were set yesterday doing the plan properly. And I was like, it'll be fine. We'll just talk, yeah. You know.
It's just chatting.
Right? It's just chatting. Yeah. But again, that's just her natural thing, even though it's completely, you know, everything she's saying, she said it probably a million times at this point, but she just likes more structure. Yeah. But in terms of the experience, you know, even though it was exactly the same cancer, but there was different differences. And that's where we did sometimes get a little bit caught out in terms of comparing notes. Actually, because, you know, my hospital was completely different to Tracy's and my journey in terms of I had more scans than what she did, because obviously Guildford's a university hospital, so they just did a little bit extra. So there were some differences in that perspective in terms of scans. So that was probably one of the points where I started to get a little bit worried, in the sense that, hang on a minute, why am I getting more scans? Why am I being called back? So I thought, God, this thing's right through me here. Ultimately, you know, and rather than asking the question, why am I getting difference? And the Macmillan nurses used to shout at us, didn't they, say, stop comparing notes, stop talking to each other, you know, but of course we couldn't help it. Right. But yeah, that was the only sort of difference. But other than that, everything was pretty much the same.
So you both had chemo, you both had surgery.
Yeah.
And you're both on tamoxifen. Is that correct?
Yeah,
I mean, that would make sense, because you had exactly the same condition, same diagnosis exactly. But I think you have different feelings about the chemo, the surgery, the tamoxifen, and how it's affected you.
Yeah, so I had my chemo first. Kathy had surgery. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Kathy had chemo. Sorry, I had surgery. Got it wrong. See, even with my notes, Kathy, I didn't get it right.
That's why you just keep winging it, Tracy. Yeah?
Exactly. So I had surgery first. And for me, I hated the surgery. I'm really sensitive to medication. The anesthetic was terrible. I had a really bad reaction to it. But I just got told, and Jackie will probably relate to this a wee bit more, because I just got told I had a sentinel lymph node biopsy, and the results hadn't come back till the morning of the surgery. And poor Dr. Wooler sat on the bed and said to me, look, we found a lymph node where it's got some cancer in it. And he said, we're going to take that out while we're in there. And I said, okay. So that was the last thing I heard before I went in for surgery. And I think, again, like Kathy, I went, oh God, what if it's elsewhere in my body? This is horrendous. I can't believe he's just told me this. Yeah. And I had a really bad experience with the anesthetic. So the hospital that we were in, we were really lucky. It was in the breast care hospital in Castle Hill in Hull. And they had, it wasn't a private hospital, but we had private rooms. And they had two very poorly patients with mental health challenges. So if anybody's going to be supportive of that, it's me, because I have a son with severe autism. Right. So I was really considerate of the fact that these poor patients, you know, were walking the floors all night, but I hadn't slept as well, because I'm a very light sleeper. And I started to hallucinate. I honestly thought I was going to be sectioned. I started to hallucinate Jackie in the middle of the night. And I was like, oh my God, I'm actually losing my mind. And it was sleep deprivation, I think.
Say, yeah.
Coupled
exactly
with... Yep. The doctor had just told me that I had it in my lymph nodes, and I'm convinced that was sort of like this darkness. I was really worried that I had cancer elsewhere in my body. So I hated the surgery. The reconstruction, though, I had mine on the same. So I had surgery and reconstruction using muscles from my back. So I had an LD flap, which is using your lats. And he swished it round, and I'm quite small breasted, so it worked perfectly for me. And all the nurses kept coming in going, oh my God, he's done such a good job. It's amazing. Look how neat it is. And I was going, I can't believe you're all looking at my breasts. But anyway, come in, have a party, knock yourself out. So the surgery for me was horrendous, but it was amazing. And you never believe this, Jackie, that 4 weeks later, you're going to be back fighting fit again, ready to go for chemo, which is exactly all it took.
That's right. It takes a while, but you're on your feet well before you know it. And I think it's the unknown too, which is why you're up in the middle of the night after surgery.
Mm. Yeah, probably. Mm. Probably. So yeah, I had the surgery, but Kathy had chemo first. Kathy, do you want to talk about your chemo?
Yes, I did indeed. I had chemo first. That was just the route that we decided to take with my consultant. And yeah, it was a nice journey for me. Not absolutely did not like it at all. So Tracy again was different. She used to have to get her PICC line in, every time she had her chemo, where mine was permanently in, because my veins were quite weak. So obviously every week we had to get that cleansed and the saline. I can still taste it to this day in my mouth, going into my, getting it cleansed every Tuesday. But yeah, we had, you know, 6 rounds of chemo, 2 different types. First 3, we were very much still at work. So we were very fortunate that we had, we work for great companies and my boss was fantastic. Having only been joined the company for 6 months at that point, he was adamant that he was going to support me and look after me, which was amazing. Very, very lucky. But anyway, we just went down the route of, like, you can come into work when and as you choose, because I'm like Tracy, we like to be, you know, sitting at home is just not really our thing. Yeah. So he allowed us on, sorry, he allowed me to dictate that. So yeah, went through the chemo. First 3 rounds, we were, you know, still up and about. First, you know, as you will know, the first sort of 7 days, three days is the hardest, right? Because obviously it's going into your system and it knocks you for 6. And I remember sitting down, getting my first chemo, and it's like, oh goodness, what's going to happen here? And the nurse was like, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, this is fine. And then all of a sudden, bang, it just hit me. And I was like, whoa. Felt like I was out on a Saturday night and had too many shandies. Yeah. So that sort of knocked me a little bit. And Tracy was there, I think, for my first one as well, to be fair. So that was quite a daunting experience initially. But as I said, dipped in and out in terms of ability and capability, in terms of my body and strength and going to work or having to rest and just listening to my body, I guess. And then when we moved to the second chemo, which obviously attacks the bones, that's when it became a big struggle for me. And I would say probably about 3 days after I had, at this point, obviously we were fairly confident with the chemo, bearing in mind it was 3 weeks apart. So everybody was, you know, going back to work and, you know, not as many people were coming to hold your hand. So obviously 3 days after the chemo, normally we were starting to come around again. So this day, Alana was back at work, and Tracy and I often had the FaceTime on, and you know, we just literally had it on in the background if we needed to have a chat with each other. It was just to know that somebody was there. Of course, this day Tracy wasn't there, she probably was in work, and I started to feel these spasms in my back, and I thought, God, this is quite scary, what is this? So I thought, I'll leave it for a while, and then it started to get worse and worse and worse. So I thought, right, I better ring somebody. And rather than just ringing an ambulance, I decided to ring half of my family, and nobody decided to answer the phone, of course. And then I go into panic mode and I'm like, what is going on? Nobody's answering me. I'm here, my young, and started to cry. And I was like, this is not good. I'm going to die. This is the day I'm going to die. And nobody's even here to watch it. So, of course, eventually Papa, who's our uncle, who was the priest, he rang back and he went, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in a meeting. Is everything okay? And I was like, I'm going to die today. This is awful. I'm getting real sharp. And he's like, so he calmed me down and, you know, said that you're fine. It's okay. It's okay. And then poor Lana rang like 3 hours later and she goes, I've been in a meeting. Is everything okay? And I goes, you need to come home. I'm not well. So she took me straight to the hospital and then they obviously admitted me straight away. My bloods were so low. They quarantined me in a room for 5 days. Nobody was allowed to come into the room. Everybody, it was like they were getting prepared for COVID because everybody had gloves and masks on them at this point. And then the spasm started, and I'll never forget that. Obviously, I went in on the evening time, and my consultant came to see me the next morning, or right about lunchtime. And Alana's too busy eating the hospital food while I'm lying in pain, and the doctor's chatting away to me, and I was like, I'm getting really bad pains up my back. And he was like, go get some morphine. And he left anyway. And Alana said, I said, did you hear him saying morphine? And Alana's like, no, you're fine. It's fine. But literally had left the room and I was doing palpitations. I was doing the breakdancing up and down the bed. The spasms were going from my toes up my back into my head. And I thought, God, this is it. This is definitely it. I'm not going to survive this. There's something not right here. So in fairness, they came running back in and they only gave me like 1 milligram of morphine. It wasn't like it was, but it did the trick. Within 10 minutes, I was just completely calm again. Everything was relaxed.
So what was it? What was going on?
It was literally spasms. It was spasms. It
was a reaction to her chemo, Victoria.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
So I was taking a reaction because the chemo, obviously they give you the strongest chemo, don't they, when they're trying to give you chemo. So they just would reduce the chemo by 30%. So it wasn't as intense going into my body. So after that I was fine. But yeah, quarantined for 5 days. My bloods were, everything was so low. My immune system was really low. That was a journey and a half for me. But other than that, that was probably the most drastic episode. And definitely the second round of chemo definitely impacted me massively for sure.
Okay. Yeah, the second half, because I think we had the same chemo. It was FECT, Jackie, you'll know what that is. So the T target, the bones, but the second batch of three chemos were particularly grueling for both of us, to be fair. But Kathy then, her chemo was reduced by 30% from there on in then. So she didn't go back to a normal dose again. She stayed on that dose for the rest of her treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, for anyone who's had FECT, I think that was what I had.
Yeah,
it's not great. We know it's killing any toxins and any tiny cancer cells in your body. So you go with it, of course. Let me bring in Jackie then. Further, what do you think of the stories of Kathy and Tracy and the similarities and the differences?
I really like the motto of share, don't compare. I think that's just brilliant because, as you said, you can have on paper identical cancers. But you're right, it depends on people's reactions to actually even hearing the news, how they sort of cope with it in those dark times in the middle of the night, like Tracy did after her surgery. I sort of getting that news literally just as you're having your anesthetic, I think that was quite hard to take. Then how you react to surgery and the drugs, it varies from person to person. And I think it's really important that people keep that in mind. It's great to share tips, I've tried this works, or I've tried that and that sort of made it helpful. But everybody's so different and how everybody reacts to things are so different. People recover from surgery really quickly. Some people take that a little bit longer. You look at reactions to chemotherapy, and I think it's really important to keep that in mind when you do have your treatment, that it is different from person to person. And, while we have a sort of structural pathway for recommending breast cancer treatments, it will vary slightly depending on the person, the size of the cancer, the location of the cancer. So there will be very small differences. And I think it's, being able to share and, as long as you're sort of mindful, this is my cancer, it's tailor-made for me particularly, I think that's really quite helpful.
Mm. Can I ask about Tricia? In the middle, in terms of age, how was it for her with you two going through this?
Her heart was broke. We kept throwing punches in her poor face, and then Kathy went in, obviously, where she was very poorly on her second round of chemotherapy. I was in hospital crying my eyes out because I was, losing my mind, thinking I'd cancer everywhere. So bless her heart, she's the most emotional out of us all. So actually for Tricia to have to handle that was huge. She's a single mom to Katie and Carter as well, so she didn't have a partner that she could lean on like us. But the great thing about FaceTime, and all of us know this now because of COVID, but we were lucky to have access to it when we were going through treatment, was that I think when you can look in somebody's face and see that they're okay, that really helped her. That played a massive part in all of our lives, actually.
Because you can't hide anything. So when you're looking at somebody's face, on the phone, I'm fine.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. And I think for her, that was really reassuring. And she came over. She's a hairdresser. So she was a big part of, how to wear makeup, how to cut her hair, so she was really involved. And in some ways that was really nice for her because she was able to contribute in a really positive way. Mm-hmm. But equally, she took turns, she was over and back from Northern Ireland to England regularly to be with us for either chemo or surgery or recovery or just celebrating that we got to the end. So she was amazing. And considering she's a single mom with two kids, she played a pivotal role really in helping us get through it. But she was very emotional and just thought, what are you two nutters doing to me? Like one punch on this side, one punch on the other. Would you please stop, for goodness sake? But we got through it, and she's still amazing. You know, she still plays a big part in all of our roles. We were on the phone half an hour before we came on here, you know, FaceTiming, having a laugh and a chat with each other. And so we're very close. So no. Yeah. But in the middle it was really tough. She obviously went for tests as well, and thank God she came back with no risk. But she goes every year now for regular mammograms, because whilst it's not genetic and we all had the genetic testing, I just think they want to make sure that, you know, they keep an eye on her to make sure they're ahead of it if anything.
Quite right too.
Absolutely.
Kathy, you have both, Kathy and Tracy, had the 5-year all clear.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Massive weight off our shoulders, of course. You think 5 years is such a long time, but actually it isn't. I just felt completely, I think I did a bit of a war dance around the living room. And it was myself and Alana and our niece Cara was staying with us for a while recently. And the three of us were literally dancing around the living room whenever I came home from getting the all clear. So absolutely delighted. I guess deep down I knew I was going to be okay. But ultimately you still have the worry, right? And you'll know from experience, I guess, is that every day, even something like a little twitch about anything, you go, oh, what's that? You know, you're definitely more alert. But overwhelmed, overjoyed. Tracy had just been, had the all clear just a few weeks prior to me, really. And bless her, she was so good, as she always is. Didn't want to tell everybody in the family that she'd had the all clear until I had my all clear. So we certainly had a double celebration, celebrated and had definitely a few too many sherries that weekend for sure as well.
Can I ask how, if at all, it has changed your outlook on life, Tracy?
Yeah, massively. I am definitely the less person, but now I'm much more able to live for the day. And for the moment, my husband is amazing at making me do things that I will, will add value to my life and forget about the stuff that's going on in the house, you know, and come on, we're going to get out. We bought ourselves during lockdown a little VW van. We're big walkers and big hikers, Victoria. So we go away when we can in the van. I've just come back from Everest Base Camp. I would never have done that.
Wow.
I would never have done that if I hadn't have been through cancer. I changed my career. So now I work as an oncology cancer rehab exercise specialist. I would never have done this if I hadn't had cancer.
We often talk through the journey of the cancer that obviously we had, you know, we decided we wanted to give something back straight away. And our big focus point was that we were going to do 10K runs. So Tracy's obviously coming from a fitness background anyway. Through the conversation, she's saying, you know, I think I might want to slow down and, you know, go part-time. And I'm like, the hell with that. I'm going 150 miles an hour. I'm doing as much as I bloody well can. And now she's even worse than me. She works 160 miles per hour. We both, you know, from that perspective, and I guess maybe we'll talk about it later, but I thought I'd jump in here in terms of the fitness piece. It was huge for us. Because actually, where Tracy had her operation, then her chemo quite quickly, I had my chemo, then the mastectomy, but I didn't get reconstruction until a year later because of the 10K runs. But in between that, you know, our exercise regime, she had me training 5 days a week, you know, helping me rehabilitate my body, you know, nice slow pace and build up. So that when it came to us doing the 10K runs, we were super fit and super ready and prepared for that. And ultimately, I guess when Tracy talked about her frustration or her, challenges around the surgery, for me, it was a much more easier transition for the reconstruction because I was definitely much fitter, much healthier and a year down the line. So I suppose to the point is don't be afraid of that, I guess, in terms of waiting and putting yourself under pressure. Sorry, I thought I'd just jump in there, Tracy.
No. But I think both of us had big career changes. So Kathy started two businesses. But we are definitely, we think less about should we, and we go, should, and that's amazing. And I feel I'm really grateful for that, because whilst we were always very sort of driven individuals personally and both professionally, I've walked away from a really big corporate role to do what I really enjoy doing now. And I'm so grateful for that. And I love it. And my husband thinks I'm a completely different person because of that. So yeah, so massively changed. It's definitely changed both of us, but again, in different ways. Kathy's still a nutter and goes at 300 miles an hour, Kathy, not 100 miles an hour. But we love to celebrate together, and we love to hang out together, and we love to spend time with our family. And I think my values have changed as well. I think I walk out. I remember one point during chemo when my body was wrecked, probably the fifth or sixth round. And you get really tired on the sort of last few rounds of chemo. And I went outside and I just sat in the garden and a breeze on my face. And I was just like, what a gift that is. And something as small as a breeze on your face, you were really present for and you paid attention to. I wouldn't have had time to do that prior to doing this. My corporate job did not allow me to do that. So I, in many ways, thank the cancer for making me review what's really important in life. And I've definitely shifted my values to much more, being much more present with everybody that I deal with, both family and friends.
Have you seen other situations like this with siblings, with maybe best friends?
I think it's really common. Somebody who has experienced cancer does, I think, affect you, whether it's both personally, professionally. It does make you sit back and sort of reevaluate your values and what's important in life. And people have made some massive lifestyle changes. And I think, I've seen a lot of career changes over the years. It's how you live your life, what's important. You know, some people say yes to everything where they before they wouldn't. And I think that's just so important. So it just gives you a chance to step back. Well, nobody wants cancer, but it just gives you an opportunity to step back, take a deep breath, and then prepare yourself to move forward. And it affects, not only, the person going through cancer, but their family, their friends. I think it has a wider impact. It's almost like a ripple effect on those around them. So yeah, I have seen lots of impact. Yeah.
I mean, I can totally relate to your attitude post-cancer, both Tracy and Kathy. I feel like I just want to say, we are the lucky ones. We are so lucky, and we know we're grateful for that every single day. There are people who get a diagnosis and their cancer isn't treatable and they don't have this opportunity to go, okay, I'm going to change this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be present. I'm going to say yes. And so, yeah, just want to sort of acknowledge that and thank.
Yeah.
Thank God that our cancer was treatable,
Definitely. And I think we've seen that with both our mum and our dad. And our little sister who died in a car accident, and certainly for us, it does give you that motivation to live your life to the full. And so we totally relate to the fact that not everybody makes it as well, Victoria. Yeah. It's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
We often say, don't we, on a daily basis when we're chatting, if something we can hear something on the news or there's a tragedy, or when we're so grateful every day, every single day, that we just do like that. We're saying, God is good. Thank God for us. We're so lucky, We're so lucky. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Kathy, thank you so much. It's so lovely having sisters on together. I love it. Jackie, thank you for your advice as well.
It's
really,
a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. And remember, you can contact Future Dreams or me on social media. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. So if there are things you think we should be talking about or stories like Kathy and Tracy's that need to be heard on this podcast, please, please do contact us. And Then Came Breast Cancer is brought to you by the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity, which provides practical, emotional and psychological support for anyone diagnosed with the disease. And this podcast is a Factory Original and 6 Foot 6 production. Thank you, all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye. Thank you so much for having us.
Bye-bye. Thank you so
Cheers,
much,
guys.
Victoria. Take care. Bye-bye.
Our podcast is intended to be a message of support for everyone who has been touched by breast cancer. And that's why our guests share their personal and unique stories with you. They express their personal opinions, which don't necessarily reflect those of Future Dreams or our sponsors. Our guests' individual stories do not constitute medical advice and shouldn't be treated in any way as a substitute for professional expertise or a consultation with healthcare professionals. This podcast is not offering to treat your cancer, but it is trying to help by talking about it. So hopefully you realize that you are not alone.